The Morning Brew Podcast with Jaffe and Razor, sponsored by Berkshire Bank Home Lending, where you borrow matters. I don't know what was more impressive on Saturday, if it was the Bruins 5-1 win over the Avalanche at TD Garden. They're now 20-3. They're plus 44 on the season, goals for, goals against. That's pretty impressive. Or if it was the alumni game played at Warrior. Razor playing forward, looked like wing at least.
Left wing, yeah. I don't do center. I don't like the faceoffs.
Oh, that's an interesting comment. I'm going to have to dive into that more. Razor a plus two in the game. You had some apples too. You had a few assists.
Two assists.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Did you guys win or lose? We didn't never get to the bottom.
Big win. I mean. Our defense was so good. We won 6-2, and we gave two freebies at the end. 6-4 final.
Okay, so 6-4 final. That's impressive. The debuts of Chara, Miller, McQuaid comes back, or the new suit. I'm not sure. That might have been the most impressive. Razor debuting the new suit. One of. It was a good look. We're going to get into maybe some clothes. I get asked about clothes a lot. I like my clothes. I think you like your clothes too. You look good, bud. You look sharp. That might have been the most impressive debut.
Well,
you know, geez. More so than Chara and Miller, I would say.
Yeah, uneventful, those guys.
How were they in that game?
It was very easy for them. I would much easier for them than it was for me. It's just so funny because they're so big and long and strong. Yeah. And when they get among the common folk like myself now, it's just funny how easy hockey is. Different.
You know? Chara looks skinnier, by the way. He's lost
30, I think. It was what he was saying. I mean, which for him, I mean, I don't know. He could be 1,000 pounds at this point. He's so tall. It's the funniest thing how tall he is. But much slimmer, slimmed right down.
That's crazy because he was never heavy. That was the thing. He was always ripped and lean. He was listed at 6'9", 255 or so, 250 to 255. If you're telling me that he lost 30, you think he's down to 225? Holy smokes.
Yeah, it looks like he should be more than that, but maybe his number at 250 wasn't really right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm 225.
He's skinny.
I mean, that's scary. I'm not proud of that, but that's crazy. We welcome you into Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor post-game. Bruins win 5-1 over the Colorado Avalanche. They just continue to win and do it impressively. Not taking anything away. Colorado missing some important players. In this lineup. That's part of it, though. Part of the game. This show, as always, is presented by the awesome people at Berkshire Bank. Please make sure to check them out if you're in the need for some banking or for some mortgages. And also, this episode is made possible by our friends at Fazenda Coffee, at Bickford's, and also at Rodenheiser. And a little bit later in this show, we will touch on it. This is going to be a little bit of a quicker brew, if only because it's late at night. We got early mornings, but another fun game at the Garden. A different, at least for me, maybe this, you know, even though you got the Stanley Cup champs coming in, and I respect the hell of them, they're awesome. Like, and they're going to be fine in my book, Razor. They're going to be fine when it's all said and done. But the whole Western Conference, Eastern Conference, nowhere near as a rivalry as you have against Tampa or against Carolina. Awesome energy but a little bit of a different feel, almost like a one-off. You know what I mean, bud? And that doesn't take away from the experience, but it definitely changes, at least for me, the vibe, as I like to say a little.
Yeah, I think it was a great vibe for everybody who bought their tickets in the summer to come see the Stanley Cup champ. They had that vibe of a lot of people that were just happy to be there.
Yep.
And wanted to be in the building and wanted to see the Stanley Cup champs. But I think I agree with you, for some of us who get to go every game and see it every game, the Carolinas, the Tampas are a little more exciting. And to the point, the roster of Colorado having their big boy Landeskog, the leader, out, I think mm-hmm. that just does change the dynamic just enough that you feel like it's not the full Monty.
Right. Yeah. Pun not intended, Monty, but yeah. Or maybe intended. Look, that's weird. But you know, and of course you play the game. You know, that's part of the 82 game schedule. You play the game, you play the team that is lacing the skates up in front of you. That's just what you're taught. And that's what makes a pro a pro. They try not to deviate from anything, their routine, their effort, etc. But I think these guys know if they face him at the end of the year, and they're going to face him in a couple of days again, this time out in Colorado, I don't think, I could be wrong here, Razor, I don't think any of the Landeskogs, Nichushkin, Evan Rodriguez, Josh Manson, who else am I forgetting? I think there's one more. I don't think they're anywhere, they're going to be back next week still for this mm-mm. team. So, you know, if I'm wrong, I apologize. So if the Bruins make it far, and that would be a wonderful if, you know, they do, I think they fully expect, if they're playing Colorado, that they will see a very different team.
No question. And also they're on the road. They've been hanging around Boston for a couple of days. They were in Buffalo. So you also have the road blahs that, you know, so again, yeah, there's no question the Bruins won't be fooled into thinking that if they play them in the finals, that they win 6-2 every game. But regardless of all of that, the Bruins just cranking out another top shelf performance.
Holy shit, man.
They don't make many mistakes, huh? They just don't make mistakes. It's like, and when they do, like on the goal tonight, when they do, it's like, oh, wow.
Accident. It was an accident.
Oh, that was, yeah. It's an accident mistake. It's wild how good they are. It really is.
It is. It's impressive. Everybody involved in this game. Another phenomenal start. Charlie McAvoy, instead of waiting for the second period like he did against Carolina, comes out and throttles a couple of guys, you know, early on in this game, makes a Boku statement. Montgomery and decides to still pair him and Hampus Lindholm together. And it's the right thing, again, especially given the situation of the Colorado Avalanche in that they don't have their full roster. You know, they have that one loaded line in Rantanen and McKinnon. And I just love watching both those guys play. And whether it was JT Compher, who is the center, who's the other, who am I forgetting? He had Compher with him the second and third period to try and get
the power play
line. Yeah. And power play to really try and get him going. But I mean, Lindholm and McAvoy completely outstanding out there. I mean, holy shit. I mean, just doing things with the puck, moving it, manipulating the play. Just phenomenal to watch on the ice. And then, you know, you get a goal on the power play about 6 minutes in from Pastrnak. And, I mean, absolutely no question, right? Brad Marchand, also instrumental in starting the game off for the Bruins. I think McAvoy and Marchand, the M&Ms, were instrumental in getting the Bruins on the right foot early on, the way that those guys played.
Yeah, they were fantastic in the first period, to your point. The physicality, the energy that Brad brought was drawing two penalties. They had that, their line had the best 5-on-5 shift, without question. About halfway through the first period before they scored, just flying and had three opportunities. You know, I couldn't agree that those guys were the best players. And I really thought Brad brought it tonight again for that Saturday night special.
He was, I mean, there's no question this was his best game. You've talked to him pregame now. And you asked him about, or was it pre or post? I don't remember, bud. But anyway, you asked him about it, and it was pre the other day, and he admitted, the same thing he did, I think it was with maybe Fluto or somebody, about, I'm not where I need to be. I'm just not there. He felt that, especially in the battle, Razor, he says, he's not winning the battles that he normally did, and being able to sustain those battles for a long period of time, right? And he won those battles tonight. He not only was able to, show the patented Marshy cutbacks and in tight play, he was winning battles. He was sustained. He had sustained energy in them. And he admitted at postgame that this is the best he's felt. So that's fantastic to see. He makes a beautiful cross seam pass over to David Pastrnak, who hammers it by Pavel Francouz. Over the glove, not the blocker, the glove, because he's a lefty stick holder. And he spoked it by him, and that set things up, and it's kind of set the tone, and the way they did it. And I loved your question to Brad in the intermission about the radius of David Pastrnak. Pastrnak does have really good mobility, especially for the one-timer, but he has the ability to adjust. He's not a stationary one-time guy. He can get to it. And he has a the way that he, I'll call it the way he addresses the puck, his windup. It's a little bit, it's a new age. It's not straight up and high and back scratcher. I mean, he gets it up, but he can maneuver. He can really do it. He's flexible, put it that way, and nimble. And he can get the pucks in many different places. And he just hammered it. I mean, again, it was just one of those rocket shots.
Yeah, it was full pace. It was all about the pace, and he got a hold of it. Francouz, it's a long pass. We've talked about that, how that's a really long seam pass. A lot of goalies get there, and a lot of goalies Francouz probably makes that save on 50% of the league just because they can't beat him with the same kind of shot that David does. And just hammer time, and it happened so fast. That one happened real fast. They didn't really get set up in their zone. They didn't get a good rotation going. They just got it in, broke it out, and then found the seam right away.
I thought key on that play, too, was how Marchand was able to bring the puck into the offensive zone. And I believe it was the player Megna who was back pressuring him. And I don't know. I don't want to say he over-pursued. Maybe he did, actually, a little bit. But he brought it back, and so three halves were deeper. Megna didn't, he gave up the blue line per se with the back check hard. And instead of pushing him into the D, he kept pursuing it. That allowed Brad to just leave the puck upon entry. And then The Bruins get set. The puck comes right back down from the point. I believe it was McAvoy ends up getting it, puts it back to Marchand on the right side. He sizzles the pass, the seam pass from the right over to the left for the one-timer for Pastrnak and gets things going. Bruins up 1-0. And then soon after, Trent Frederick, about 5 minutes later, gets his first of the game on a beautiful play that I am, when I'm done with this, I'm going to text it out to my Eagles team. Just the way that Frederick got above the puck in the slot area and then to help initiate it and then ends up getting rewarded by going to the net, to the far side. It was just gorgeous. If you get a chance, folks, watch the play. A really good hockey goal. Of course, I mean, people are saying, well, you're an idiot, Billy. They're all hockey goals. No, you know what? I mean, it was just a hockey play from entry to pursuit to pressure to reload to passing to finish. I mean, it had a lot of elements to it that I loved.
It's a beauty. And again, just kind of brought everything, the way the Bruins are playing, encapsulated the way the Bruins are playing a goal like that. Just, like you said, front to back, just exactly how you want your team, your fan, your group of players to play.
I think the Bruins had 14 takeaways in the game, if I remember correctly. It's a lot, and you had to do that. I mean, they were trying to take away time and space from McKinnon all night long, and they really did a pretty good job of it, Razor.
Yeah, Nate Dogg was quiet, really quiet. Almost disappointingly quiet for me. You want to see him break through the neutral zone or get one or two good opportunities just to see his speed and power, but Bruins negated it really well.
23 and a half minutes for McKinnon. He had four shots on goal, a couple of other attempts, 10 of 19 in the faceoff circle, but You're right. Quiet. Even Jake, my son, said similar. He's like, yeah, you know, you don't really get to know the team that you're seeing because they don't have everybody, but you know, you want to know that you're going to see the big guys do their thing. And he was interesting. Sure. He talked about him and Makar. He said, well, Makar, you noticed a bit more. McKinnon, you didn't really notice. And it's because the Bruins stripped the puck from him an awful lot. I'm confirming, yes, the Bruins did have 14 takeaways in the game. Just five for the Colorado Avalanche. That was a slick move. Actually, slick is the wrong term. How would you describe, I'll ask you as a goalie, Pasternak's breakaway move. How would you describe that? Because that was the old knee buckler.
I was going to say ankle breaker. That's what I was thinking. Ankle breaker. That's the worst when you get beat with that big of a fake without David really doing much. He really didn't do much, but he's just so dangerous that you're as a goalie, you overthink it, and he's certainly over. You know, David wants to deke on a breakaway. If he goes back and thinks about it, he's like, oh, I knew he was going to fake me. Like, but these guys are so good.
Do you think Francois were his feet set? Should they have been set more? I kind of felt like he was almost moving. And isn't the old saying you want the goalie to make the shooter make the first decision?
Yeah, well, you need to have that drift. You don't want to have your feet completely set because then you're really at a loss. But yeah, he. I think that's the other reason why he bit on that, because he had too much speed coming. He thought David was coming faster than he was, and David was able to maneuver gap on him, and that's why that shot really, or that fake shot really made him bite. And then, of course, he puts it right under the bar, too, to add insult to injury. It's hard to do that on your forehand, right? It's hard to go.
Yep.
It's hard to fake shot and then pull it and shoot forehand. Normally you see Marchand do that. He fake shot and he goes backhand the same way. It's easier to do that.
It's a better quick elevation off your backhand there than you do your forehand, which doesn't. People that maybe don't play but love the game, it's not hard to explain. The backhand, you get more on that roof shot compared to when you're deking and you're going forehand. It's just a different thing.
Unless you're David Pasternak and you put it in the exact same spot that you would if a backhander. Is crazy.
Pasternak later in the game had a play coming up the right wing side. It was a stretch play that was a quasi-stretch play anyways. And I can't remember who it was against, but he was able to somehow get the puck on his stick and then still maneuver it and everything. And I'm like, nothing came of it. But I'm saying to Sean, our producer, I'm like, holy shit, like that play right there. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about. But it was like, wow. And that's the hands of Pasta. I mean, that's the ability. And he's starting to do things just kind of naturally now. He's always been creative, we know that, and get you out of your seat, but now he's doing it just so good. He's in this rhythm of his game, in this area of his game that is so mature and so as you've said, easy. You've said that about Krejci, really. By the way, Krejci with a gorgeous backhand pass to Pasternak to set him on that breakaway too. That was just scored. But anyways, Pasta's becoming that. And he actually had to signal his own goal, too, because the puck came in and out so quickly.
Yeah.
got that. Ref. Actually, I'll give the ref credit on that one. The ref knew it went in, too. Not everybody else did. What did you think of the no call? I'm bouncing around here. But I thought part of the physical part of the first period was Nick Foligno's fight against England, the kid Andreas England, Swedish kid, about 6'3". He's only listed 190. He sure looks bigger than 190 to me.
Yeah.
I thought it should have been called a penalty on England. I thought he got enough of Nick from behind. I do think he pulled up. He tried to at the last second. I do. But he still made contact from behind in a vulnerable spot. And then Greer tried to engage England in a scrap. He wouldn't, and as soon as Foligno came over, he was more than happy to oblige. And it ended up being what I thought was an excellent fight.
Yeah, it was a good one. I think Foligno didn't really give him as much of a choice as AJ did. Foligno, after Greer went in there, Foligno, you know, really didn't give him much of a choice. That's why he ended up getting the two extra minutes at the end of the day.
I think it should have been even, though, in my opinion. And I'm not playing Homer black and gold here. I think there could have been a penalty on England for the hit. The referees, I'm guaranteeing, are saying, well, he pulled up and it wasn't, he didn't extend to push into the wall. I don't know. I disagree. But regardless, go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't think I he could have called a penalty on that to begin with. It probably gets rid of the fight at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It was a good fight. They killed it off, and then that was kind of the beginning of the end for the refs. It felt like they were trying to chase the game after they missed that call. They didn't do a very good job the second and third. There was a lot of bad calls.
Ticky-tacks.
Yeah, really must have been frustrating for the Avalanche, but no, it was a good fight. And again, it just created energy in that first period for the group. These guys are getting in fights. They're standing up for each other. They're not getting pushed around.
Arguably, I said this on the air, maybe the most impressive shift, an important shift of the game, came after the goal was disallowed. Or, you know, the officials went to review and they said, no, no goal. The one where Jake DeBrus thought he had scored, net off the pegs. It was an interesting, kind of a curious explanation I felt from the league raiser. There was no mention of the offensive player taking the net off its pegs. It was just that the net was deemed to be fully off one or both of its pegs. It only needs to be off one, but it deemed to be off its pegs, its moorings, before the puck fully crossed the line. Meanwhile, we know that if the net comes off, especially by a defensive player, and yet there was still an imminent scoring a chance or the puck was going to go in regardless, like we saw in the Charlie Coyle play a few games ago, that you can count. I'm not going to argue that the goal shouldn't have counted. I actually thought at first, I don't think it's going to count because I did think that the net was off, and I don't think Jake meant it, but I think he did it. I think he did it. So, but the explanation from the league didn't have that. So I didn't quite understand it. Did you ever get a good feel for it?
No, I mean, it didn't look like a goal to me right from the start, to your point. And I think when it comes to, like, the league sending out the statements, it's like it wasn't a goal. Like, I'd rather, you know, it didn't need – I don't think that one needed as much explanation. That the net was off. The offensive player did it. It wasn't really – that same bang-bang play that we saw with Coyle the other day in Tampa Bay. Like, it just didn't have the same vibe. So, again, right. I didn't really think of it.
Word for word, video review determined that the net was displaced prior to the puck completely crossing the Colorado goal line. Okay, I guess. But if a Colorado player had displaced it, it would have been a goal.
Yeah.
If it was, I guess, deemed imminent. I don't want to go on too much about it. But
the problem, it's like, that's the issue. What's the gray area on imminent? If you know, because then you can't score with the net off the moorings, right? So that's, you can't score that way. But if someone knocks it off and the whole thing, yeah, exactly. That's the point. That's the point.
That's all right. But let me get back to my original point. The fourth line comes out after that goal is not, and absolutely reestablished control with a fantastic shift. And I know Tomas didn't score on his penalty shot and got a little too close for the goaltender, to the goaltender Francouz, his fellow countryman there. But I thought he was great on that shift. And then, I mean, Greer and Foligno did all that behind the network. I thought just outstanding. And not that was the game there, but I thought that really reestablished game control at that time for the Bruins.
Yeah, and against the better teams in the league, that's what you need. That's so important, is those momentum-changing shifts that you have once or twice, three times a period. That's one of those times where Colorado could have found their way back into the game with some momentum. That might have given them a jolt on the road, but to your point, the fourth line squashed it immediately.
No, that was fantastic. Let's take a moment here and recognize our sponsors. Again, we are always presented by Berkshire Bank. Thank you to Berkshire Bank for being the presenting sponsor of Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor for, well, going on a season and almost a half right now. Thank you to them. Fazenda. Go to FazendaCoffee.com. Check out the Morning Brew blend or any other blend there. They've got, geez, I don't know. I don't know how many, but it's not like 2 or 20 or I don't know. They got tons of blends there. But if you want the Morning Brew blend, go specifically to fazendacoffee.com/morningbrew. It is bold. It is bold, and it is it's smooth though, man. It is good. Check out fazendacoffee.com/morningbrew. Bickford's. Bickford's has got a couple locations, 2 to be exact, in the Boston area, one in Wilmington, one in Marlboro. In Woburn and in Wilmington. And they've got amazing breakfast. They got the endless cup of coffee, speaking of coffee there. They've got awesome. I mean, they've got awesome breakfast. The pancakes and the eggs and all that stuff is just phenomenal. But they've also got great lunch, and they've got seafood that is fresh. And it is, I mean, it's what you want. I mean, that's exactly what you want. And to go up there and get a lobster roll. I am jonesing for a lobster roll. I am. I don't know the last one I had, Razor. I can't remember. But I need to go up there.
A while for me.
I may have to go do this. So go check out Bickfords.com in Wilmington, in Woburn. And again, everything you want. They got great, they got really reasonably priced beers there, too, if you go there for a happy hour. And they do it all there. Bickfords.com. is where you want to go. And lastly, Rodenheiser. We welcomed Rodenheiser to one of our last shows. We're going to welcome him again. And this is all about right now. They want to reach out to HVAC technicians out there, and they want to know, wouldn't it be nice to have more control over their schedule with a more flexible hour, with more flexible hours, and have a dispatch team that is dedicated to making the day efficient. You can focus providing exceptional and elite customer experience, and they do that. We've used them. They are awesome. At Rodenheiser Home Services, they make sure their HVAC technicians are motivated each and every day. How do you do that? You do that by taking care of your people. That's what they're doing there. So if you want to join their team of elite technicians, all you got to do is you visiting careers.rodenheiser.com and apply today. Again, HVAC technicians, look at Rodenheiser. If you're looking to change, go to careers.rodenheiser.com and apply today. We thank them and we appreciate them coming on board. Lena Solmark hadn't played except one game in 12 days, Razor? I had 4 really good saves in the first period. Do you agree with that? That were, you know, didn't steal the game, but were difference makers in the game, meaning in that first period, not again giving Colorado the hope.
Yeah, and the big one for me was right out of the gates, or fairly early out of the gates, when was it Comfer that drove the net, and he had to hang in there. Clifton was right on his back.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, as a goaltender, you just got dinged up last time you were out. He stood tall in there, kept it out of the net on the short side, and had to fight through that a little bit. So I thought that was his biggest one to get him into the game. That one he could have bounced around. You get a little bit of luck in those situations too, where it bounces around, bounces in the net. But I thought he stood firm there. And yeah, he was, anytime you had the MacKinnon, that power play, he had made a couple good stops on that power play earlier on too. So just a solid game. One of those games that we've seen, half a dozen times probably now, where he wasn't the star, but he gave up 1 on 23 at the end of the day and made some good saves early on to give them a chance to get going.
Yeah, and now the Bruins have day off on Sunday. No skate, by the way. But Monday starts a trek of some pretty good amount of games. They play one more at home. Bruce Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights coming to town. And then they head out to Colorado, to Arizona. They're playing every other day. So you're going to need both Ullmark, Linus, and Jeremy to be sharp coming up. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I can't see them not alternating right now, assuming that both goalies are playing well. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. The one caveat could be Monday night with Vegas coming in. That's a big boy game if the way Linus has played at home, especially being undefeated, the amount of games you might see Linus go back on Monday night. Okay. But then after that, then right. I'm rotating. Okay. Once you get on the road and get through the rent, I just feel like this one just a little bit more special for everybody.
Yeah, I could see that. A couple of more things from this game. So the Bruins are up 3-0 on that breakaway goal by Pastrnak. Cogliano scores 6.5 minutes into the third period, as we said, on a mistake. I mean, an accident. Not even a mistake. It was an accident. Guys running into each other. And then the puck comes to Cogliano, who feels – I feel like he's played for like 42 years. but and all he does is play. He doesn't miss games. Good for him, no. Michigan guy. And made it 3-1, but then Trent Frederick and Jake DeBrus scores. Frederick with a gorgeous pass, 2-on-1 play, transitional play back through the neutral. And that was another thing. The Bruins not only back-checked well, they stripped pucks, and they transitioned it quickly well back up the ice. And that was key. And the 2-on-1, and Frederick just, I mean, he doesn't really open just a teeny bit, just the hands a little, and he one-times it with a snipe over the blocker side of Francois from the right side, made it 4-1, 15:32 of the third. And then 10 seconds later, the Bruins put the old nail in the coffin when Jake DeBrus got his 100th. You know, he got his 100th goal, but it was a gorgeous gorgeous play from, again, from start to finish. Bruins get the puck in. It's cycled back. You get guys moving. You get Forbert, who jumps up to the line, hammers it to the net from the left point, deep left point. And then DeBrusk is driving far post with his stick on the ice and hammers it in. So that was fun, too, to see that. Did I say 100th goal? I meant 100th point, right?
It's 100th goal.
100th goal?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. You're on.
Late,
yeah.
All right. Well, I should trust myself at late at night. I should actually start drinking, is what I should.
Yeah.
100th goal. Sorry. You're right. Congratulations. Shots on goal in the game, 40-25 in favor of the Bruins. Bergeron was 21 for 30 in the faceoff. It was unbelievable, including 6 of 8 in the D zone alone. And the Bruins, masterful, 62.5% faceoff efficiency. In the ozone. Bergeron now is number 2 or 3 in the NHL. He's probably jumped up to number 2. Jonathan Toews is ahead of him in that area, Razor, but he's won the second most faceoffs in the NHL, too. And he gets kicked out more than anybody. That's the other thing, too, and he continues to win.
The puck possession is so important against that team. And the especially, you know what, just the rest of the teams are playing up until they're playing good ones. That puck possession is so big in the NHL now. They keep dominating. Yeah.
They keep doing it. All right, let's finish up with this. You brought up, you know, big boy game on Monday against Vegas. And we don't normally preview, and we're not going to preview the game here, but whose team has more at stake in this game coming up? Who are more invested? Is it the Bruins because Bruce Cassidy coached here for 6 years and they, you know, there was some, obviously some issues with some players and, you know, after some tumult, you know, they made a decision. We thought he was going to stay. Then they said, you're going to go. And, you know, then he left and okay. Or is it the Vegas Golden Knights coming in and saying, well, hey, we're taking on the hottest team in the National Hockey League at their rink. Let's do it for our coach who's brought some good structure to us. He's done what's as advertised, right? He's brought structure and some different stuff, different style to their game in Vegas. Can you look at this game and say that one team has more invested than another?
I the way I see it is, if Vegas wins, the high of winning will be higher and the low of losing will be lower. But if the Bruins win, it'll just kind of be another win and another loss. So Vegas
really
can, I think
so
Vegas
you don't think
can
that any well, sorry to interrupt, but you don't think that
no, you're good.
if the there's some players that we know that has been written about, talked about, you know, if they win, do you think they would just think of it as just another win?
Yeah, they're going so well that yes. But if they lose to him, that will annoy a few of those guys. That's where I see it. So I think if they win, they'll be happy, but they won't really focus on it. Or if they lose, that'll be kind of aggravating. I think the same way, Cassidy will be much happier with a win. If he loses, he'll somehow slough off that they're 14-0 at home. We didn't really think we were going to win anyways, etc. So I think he'll be until he goes home.
there's always, we always talk about like a good trade, right? Like a good hockey trade, where things were. I mean, look, Pavel Zacha for Erik Haula so far has worked for both teams.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's been really good. Yep. By the way, I was at the Devils game the other night when they should have beaten the Nashville Predators. They had the game, and then the Preds somehow get the victory, and they lost in overtime to New Jersey. And Haula looked good. But, man, oh, man, that Jersey team is good. But I digress. And I know that it wasn't trading Bruce Cassidy for Jim Montgomery, per se, right? They didn't get traded for each other because they're coming from different organizations. But I like to see that it's worked out well for both teams. I really do. Obviously, Montgomery has been spectacular for the Bruins. He's been what they've needed. There's no question that this is what they needed right now. His different communication skills, his different way of getting through to guys, his different way of coaching, too, with the system, right? But you know what? Bruce Cassidy has also been what Vegas needs. And so I'm thrilled for him. You know, he was snapped up in 5 days or whatever it was, you know. I'm thrilled for him. Looking forward to seeing him. And I'm glad his team is doing well because, you know what? It gives this game more juice. If they were just, okay, whatever, it wouldn't have the same meaning. I think it gives this game a lot more juice for a Monday night in December.
Yeah, this is as juicy as a Monday night in December gets. There's no question. Yeah, both teams are going to be one. So, you know, they'll be a little annoyed that the other one got the upper hand, whoever wins and loses, for sure.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. We got anything else from this game? Did I forget anything? Did I miss anything? I probably did. Oh, well, I'm sorry. It's late. Folks, it's late. It's way too late. Really. Yeah. It's time for us to go to bed. Razor's got a long day. I got a long day tomorrow too. Where's youth hockey take you after your two apples in the seniors?
Yeah, today was the day. Today started real early, so I'm smoked. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we're in Foxboro and Hopedale.
Hopedale? Where the hell's Hopedale?
495, like out near Bellingham out there.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Hopedale. I hope to make it there one day.
There you go.
We've got Daily Rink, and then I got a rundown. Supposed to have I think I'm supposed to sit down with Bruce and do an interview with him. So hopefully we'll get that done. All right, Bruins win 5-1. They're now 20-3, Razor. 20-3 on the season. And, I mean, the Bruins are a plus 44 goal differential. As my buddy Ben Boma says, that's a pace of a plus 156 on the season. The pace thing is always funny. That's crazy. But anyways, the Bruins are rolling, 14-0 at home, 20-3. Everybody's having fun. Thank you to the other sponsors besides Berkshire Bank, Fazenda, Bickfords, and Rodenheiser. Thank you for Razor being able to stay awake. Go get some sleep. I'm going to go do the same. Everybody, we will talk to you. Schedule is after Monday's game as Bruce Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights and Jack Eichel come to town to take on the Boston Bruins. Have a wonderful Sunday. Have a wonderful cup of coffee.